I'm James Brierton. Welcome to the Carolina Weather Group for this November 15th, 2023.
And welcome to the Carolina Weather Group. Happy to have you this evening. It is Wednesday, November 15th, 2023, as James just told you a little bit ago. We are happy to have you joining in with us tonight. We're going to talk a little bit about a few things tonight. We're going to be talking about the volcanic activity, the earthquake activity going on in Iceland. You probably remember our friend Wendy from a show that we did earlier this year. I kind of ask her if she'd come back and kind of talk to us about what's going on and why. It may look scary. Some of this is kind of normal when we see activity like this brewing. Also, we're going to be talking about weather AI and how that is going to be helping some folks in our country who may not have English as their first language, and actually how a few offices here in the Carolinas are one of the few offices that are starting to kickstart this program. And then finally, may have heard by now, we're having a weather telethon torch the weekend to help American Red Cross. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that as well. So we're on borrowed time with Wendy, so we want to get her in first. Wendy, thank you so much for joining us again tonight. We're always happy to have you. And first of all, I know you're not a volcanologist? Volcano. Yeah. I know you deal more with earthquakes, but obviously, you've been paying attention to the situation that's going over in Iceland, and kind of give us that 30,000 foot perspective of what people are seeing. Maybe they've been scrolling on social media and they've seen all of these posts.
Yeah. No, thanks again for having me. I'm glad to be able to come and clear up some of the misconceptions about what's going on in Iceland, because people seem to have a lot of anxiety about it. So first, Iceland is really a land that's made from volcanic activity. It sits on the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, which is area in the middle of the ocean that's being torn apart. So there's new crust that's being made there all the time. There's also a plume bringing up hot magma, and that's what's formed the island. So this is not going to blow Iceland off the face of the earth. This is volcanic activity, but they have more than 130 volcanoes in Iceland, 32 of which are active. This area had not been active for about 800 years until 2021, when there was an eruption. Then there was another eruption in 2022, and then another one earlier this year, but not in the exact area that we've been talking about. So in late October, there was a bunch of earthquakes that started happening. And there have been more than 20,000 earthquakes in that area since late October, which is a lot of earthquakes. And those earthquakes aren't caused by the motion of the tectonic plates the way that most earthquakes are. They're caused by the movement of magma underneath the surface. And so that's why people are concerned. There's been a lot of talk about what might happen. So that's why it's been in the news so much.
And, you know, we've seen some fascinating videos. Social media, we always talk about how there's downfalls, but also there's some interesting things that take place. And a lot of people have phones and they have a camera and video and they can document what's going on. And we have seen some amazing footage out of there. And we were talking just before we went on air, there is one video of someone in their home and just the constant sound. And it's very eerie. But like you said, this is something that, you know, this area is kind of a little bit used to, at least.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, the earthquake activity sort of started to the northeast of a town called Grindavik. Excuse my pronunciation of Icelandic names. I'm trying my best, but they're difficult for me. And it's moved down towards the southwest. So the earthquakes are actually, like I said, they're the magma that's cracking and breaking the rock as it moves. So it's forcing its way along planes of weakness, sometimes squeezing in between rock layers and sometimes cutting across rock layers. And the breaking of the rock is the earthquakes. And so we can track where the magma is going by tracking where the earthquakes are. And it started in the northeast and now it's extended down underneath that town of Grindavik, which was evacuated, all of the people. And they finally went back and got most of the animals that were there, sheep and horses and things included. So the town is empty, but not only are there earthquakes, like you said, rolling in one after another, many of them are large enough to feel. Most of them, fortunately, are too small to feel, but are detected by sensitive seismometers. But there's also a lot of deformation of the ground. So as that magma is moving underneath, it causes the ground to change its shape or deform. And we can measure that with satellites and GPS. And so there's been a lot of damage in that town from the earthquakes and from the changing shape of the ground due to the magma coming in and moving underneath.
And if you've, if you've not seen any of those videos, if you search in Twitter, you know, Iceland volcano, obviously you want to make sure your sources are accurate, but you can really see some of these videos coming out of this town where there's just big old fissures in a road where there's mixed matched, and it's a very eerie looking thing to see an empty town with all of this damage. But kind of what's the end game, Wendy? What's going to happen eventually?
It's difficult to say. You know, volcanic eruptions are notoriously hard to predict. We can make models, we can make educated guesses. The most likely thing is that eventually the magma will make it to the surface somewhere along that 15-kilometer line where it's been emplaced, where it's squeezed into the ground. We don't know where that will be. There's a small possibility it could be off the coast, in which case it could make kind of an explosive eruption as that hot magma, hot rock comes in contact with the cold water. Not explosive like that 2010 eruption that, you know, stopped air traffic forever. Not like that. More like the eruption that happened off the coast of Japan last week. It could, unfortunately, lava could come out in the town, which is kind of a worst case scenario. That would be terrible because even though those folks are evacuated, so there's not going to be loss of life. That's a community. Those are people's homes and businesses. You don't want to see that kind of damage. Or it could come out somewhere, you know, further to the northeast along that line. So it's just still a wait and see kind of game at this point. But if you're interested in more information, the best place to go is to the Icelandic Met Office. They put out really great information on a fairly regular cadence. So that's a great place to check because, oh my gosh, the misinformation has been a little bit out of control with this particular situation.
Yeah. And like you said, it's not going to blow off the face of the earth. We're not going to see this big old black cloud that surrounds the whole atmosphere and cools us off. And like you said, shuts down air traffic and all that. And unfortunately, we hope it's not in the town. But again, this is an area that's used to this.
And there is not an increase in volcanic eruptions. So that's another question I've been getting a lot on social media because Mount Etna is erupting. There's a volcano outside of Mexico City that's erupting. There was just that eruption in Japan, but Etna erupts all the time. That volcano outside of Mexico City erupts often. Like there are usually between 40 and 50 volcanoes erupting around the world all the time. So this is not out of the ordinary. You just may be noticing it more and the news cycle may be picking up on it a little bit more because people are interested. Volcanic eruptions are interesting and exciting. So tend to report on those.
Yeah, they are. And like you said, earthquakes are kind of that thing that gets your attention. And when you see a small area with all these large, or not large earthquakes, but large quantity of earthquakes, either big or small, it definitely gets your attention. So we know that's what you specialize in. So we wanted to bring you on and kind of help clear the air on what exactly is going on out there.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about it. Always good to see you guys.
Yes, it's good to see you. For our friends and followers who may have not caught you on our last show, you're a great follow on Twitter. How can folks find you on Twitter? Or X now. I keep saying Twitter, but X, I don't know what to call it. But
I just say all the Twitters, you know, because it's Mastodon and Blue Sky and all. So any of the Twitters on TikTok, on YouTube, I am Dr. Wendy Rocks. Get it?
I forgot. TikTok is you're a great follow on TikTok too. So
thank you. I just had a video go viral. It got more than 1 million views today.
Doesn't that make you excited? I mean, isn't that cool? Like, I know you have, and people, I think to get good content like that, I know we're going off the pace here, but to get good content like that, you have to really think these things out. And you put a lot of time into making a good quality video. So when you get those views, and I know it's always exciting.
It is fun. I'm just glad that, you know, people are interested in science and that it's sort of becoming a normal part of everyday life, because the more information we have and the more we can make decisions based on evidence, you know, the better off we'll all be. So,
well, we'll let you go enjoy that Halloween candy.
All right. Thank you. You all have a great night.
Thank you, Wendy. All right, James, I'm going to toss the ball over to you.
a million views. I'll have to find out the recipe to get a million views on TikTok.
All right.
So we can figure that out. Coming up in just a few minutes right here on this live edition of the Carolina Weather Group on this Wednesday night, we're going to talk about a really cool experiment that's happening right here in the Carolinas involving the National Weather Service and artificial intelligence. But first, we want to talk about a really cool event that'll be coming your way this Saturday. We're joining forces with other weather podcasts, Uniting for Good, coming together with Weather Brains, Storm Front Freaks, Chaser Chat to support the American Red Cross in a 12-hour long streaming telethon that starts at 10 a.m. Eastern time and goes until I fall over, or 10 p.m. Eastern, whatever comes first. Joining us now is my new friend, Carly. Hi, Carly. Welcome to the Carolina Weather Group.
Hi, James. Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Carly's been making all of the fabulous promotional graphics you've been seeing, not only on our social, but on the social media of all those other joint shows. She's been cranking out. I haven't actually done the math, but if somebody does 12 times 3, which is really seemingly not 36. That hard to do. Thank you, Scotty. That's how many guests we have and how many social graphics we have. Carly, I'm really looking forward to Saturday. We've been telling our viewers and our listeners about it. But here's really what I want to know selfishly. How do you, Carly, plan to get through 12 hours of streaming weather goodness?
You know what I actually do from previous experience being on sort of the live stream is like really plan lots of coffee. I'll get like I'll order food and I'll have like my snacks prepped for the whole day. Lots of coffee. And that's really it, James. That's really it.
Coffee
I don't know how you guys are going to do it because you're hosting it the whole time. You know, I can kind of sit back and just eat my snacks and, you know, contribute, but you guys are really carrying the weight of it. So I really appreciate you guys, you know, how much work you're going to be putting into it. And I'll be actually a little excited to see you guys at the end versus at the beginning, if we could compile, you know, some clips of how everybody is beginning and end.
I think by the end of the night, I'll be coming back onto an energy high, not because I'm getting more energy, but I'll be reaching that state of exhaustion where you like your filter's wearing down. Everything's just shiny and gray.
Yeah. Listen, and I've experienced James on these highs and it's a fun James to be around. So
I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to see everybody on hour 12, to be honest with you. I think it'll be fun.
Do you have a favorite guest who's scheduled to appear, Carly, that you're most looking forward to hearing?
Do you have a guess on who my favorite guest is, James?
Oh, Mike Bettis, Jim Cantore.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I got it.
Honestly, you know what? No, yes, but also there's such an incredible panel of guests that are coming. It's honestly hard to pick. I heard today that we have scheduled to appear Tim Marshall, which is another really cool guest too. So
Ken Graham, the director of the National Weather Service, Ginger Z, Janice Dean.
Yeah.
I told Frank some of these last week and Frank hadn't seen the planning notes yet, I don't think. And Frank was like, whoa.
An all-star cast coming up.
Well, that will begin Saturday at 10 a.m. streaming right here, wherever you're watching the Carolina Weather Group on YouTube, Facebook, as Scotty calls it, Twitter, and even Twitch. And it's all to raise money for the American Red Cross. I can go ahead and put the QR code on the screen right now. It's also linked down in the comments so that you can do it now or bookmark it this weekend, because we are raising money for the American Red Cross. You can go to their website to donate. All of the financials handle through them. No money comes to us, and this is to help their great efforts for any and all upcoming disaster response that they will be participating in. And so look for Carly. Look for Stormfront Freaks, Weather Brains, Chaser Chat, Carolina Weather Group, and what is going to be an all-star lineup of weather guests. I keep joking, but I mean it. If you like this show or you like another show, but you wish it was 12 times longer, that is exactly the early holiday gift we're bringing on Saturday. Fabulous. Did I leave anything out, Carly? Did I forget anything?
You're amazing, James. That was everything. I wrote down some things to mention, and that was really all of it. Just all-star panel. I mean, incredible host. It really doesn't get any better than this. And this is really like the first time there's going to be a 12-hour charity telethon. So it's really exciting. And hopefully this could be an annual thing. I think would be really fun.
And I can tell people, rest assured, I will not be singing and dancing. I'm not that type of telethon. No one wants that. Well, Carly, you're welcome to stick around for this conversation about AI if you'd like, because we just learned earlier this month that the National Weather Service here in the Carolinas and elsewhere in the United States, but primarily two offices right here in the Carolinas, the Greenville-Spartanburg office and the Columbia office, are partaking in a new National Weather Service experiment to see how they might be able to utilize artificial intelligence to help them translate severe weather bulletins real time. The website was developed in Columbia, which is so cool that this happened right here in our backyard. All of the artificial intelligence happens up in the cloud, as you might imagine, but take a listen to why this is such an important effort that is taking place.
Motivation behind wanting to translate these products using machine learning was we've had forecasters at the San Juan office who for about 30 years have been translating manually Hurricane Center products into Spanish for their users. By using machine learning to translate these products, we cut down the amount of time needed to translate these critical weather information products from about an hour to less than 10 minutes. So recently, the partnership we have with Lilt has taken that even a step further. Now, not only do we use machine learning to translate the products into Spanish, but their patented artificial intelligence learns through a process of feedback with our bilingual forecasters in the Weather Service and translation experts who provide feedback for individual translations, which continues to allow the model to learn and increase its efficiency and accuracy.
So that's Chris Roebuck. He is a meteorologist and a developer based at the National Weather Service in Columbia, South Carolina. He built this website, weather.gov/translate, where you can go there and pick your forecast office. Again, there is about 12 of these across the United States. They're doing Spanish. They're doing some simplified Chinese, and they're hoping to add additional languages. And you can go ahead and you can pick products like tornado warnings or winter weather forecast. Each of the offices has a little bit of their own list of bulletins that they are currently translating. The National Hurricane Center is also participating in this. So whether you're trying to learn another language, you speak another language, you know somebody who speaks another language, this is a tool that they can go and use to get that life-saving information. On the screen right now, those watching on YouTube and on Facebook, you can see the translation of a actual tornado warning from March the 26th of this year, translated over to Spanish, all done by the artificial intelligence. So guys, this is really cool because it allows them to save so much time and really produce more than they might be able to produce if they had individual humans trying to translate these things. And it's so cool. It's happening right here in our own backyard. Frank, did you know this was coming out of Columbia?
Yeah, I heard about that. I got an email about it from CAE a week or so ago. And yeah, it's an interesting thing that they're doing there to use computers to translate and hopefully get it do a better job than Google Translate does.
Well, you know what? That's such a great point, right? Because I guess you could, to a certain extent, do some of this manually yourself using a product like Google Translate. But having this built right into weather.gov will help reach so many more people with that life-saving information. And I think they're really looking forward to getting it rolled out. Now, he did tell me in our extended conversation that they're trying to identify bugs, right? This is an experimental product, or what you and I might call beta, because they're trying to make sure that things get translated over accurately, but also things get translated over for appropriate dialects. He said, you know, there are different words that mean different things, or not all Spanish speakers use the same dialect, just like we have different dialects in English too. So they're trying to iron out some of those bugs.
Some good news there.
Go ahead, Carly.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm so sorry. I just wanted to add, I guess, a little personal anecdote to that. It's really interesting. I'm actually happy to join this conversation, if I may, because
please.
So I actually almost minored in Mandarin in college, and that's because I live in a very predominantly Korean and Chinese community mm-hmm. in my area. And this is something I've thought about so much, is that there are so many people who clearly would have an easier time getting a warning in their native tongue, especially with as many Chinese dialects as there are with Mandarin and yeah. Cantonese and all kinds of different things. And really the bane of my existence and my undergrad experience was Google Translate. It really doesn't do anything justice. So I'm actually, I'm so glad I learned about this today, because I had no idea, but I'm really excited to see what they do there. And I think that would be so beneficial, especially in an area like mine where it's predominantly Mandarin and Korean speakers.
I think I learned about the shortcomings of Google Translate when I struggled through Spanish classes in yeah. high school and college. It was not my strong suit. But I think that's really a good point, Carly. And I think those are the exact communities that they're hoping will start using this tool, hopefully with the understanding that it's still new and they're still evolving it, because there is a button on their website to provide feedback, because in order to kind of get this to a place where it might be widely available to everyone, they are looking for feedback. So if you want to give this a try, weather.gov/translate, there is a button in the bottom right for feedback. And I should also say, it's not even just alerts. Chris was telling me they've also translated information to help you learn and educate. Their weather dictionary has been translated. Their infographics have been translated. So a lot of the stuff that you'll see Weather Ready Nation ambassadors share to help you get prepared for a weather event, that is also on here now in multiple languages, so that you can get maybe ready for upcoming winter weather. Some of those graphics on the screen right now in English are also available in those other languages. Scotty, I think you had a comment a moment ago.
Yeah, I was just saying it's really cool because we are starting to see, you know, a lot of folks who are coming in and don't have English as a primary language. So it's really cool that happens. And I know this has also been some things the Weather Service has been working on with, like American Sign Language and even some of the graphics that they're creating for color blindness. So it's really cool that this continues to really hopefully be able to spread the word to as many folks as possible. So really, really cool to see the Weather Service doing this. And it's really neat to have this kind of maybe not originate out of the Carolinas, but the Carolinas kind of be one of the test beds for it.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm looking at their infographics right now, again, showing the English language one, but the geomagnetic storm impact scale, G1 to G5, there's something that's been really relevant. Has anyone actually been able to see the northern lights in the Carolinas? I think you maybe had to go to the top of a mountain in darkness and stare north when there weren't clouds around. But we've had some of those, you know, space weather related storm events that have been carrying those northern lights further south. So there's just a little tidbit to get into the show, because I know that's been something that people, maybe a few lucky ones, have been able to spot here at home, especially with like long exposed camera functionality. I like, did you guys just catch that my webcam just zoomed out when I made this shape with my hands? That was fun.
Doing it again.
What is happening? All right.
Is that geomagnetic storm that's affected your camera right now?
If I do it again, does it zoom back in? I know this makes no sense to our audio listeners right now. Oh, yes, it does. Yes, it does. Well, that is artificial intelligence at work, ladies and gentlemen. And that's how I'm going to wrap that segment. I'm back. Before we go, speaking of the National Weather Service, GSP tweeted out this picture earlier today, and I think I spotted it on some of our CNC weather cams, but I don't know if anybody at home also got to see them. We did have a rare weather phenomenon happen today in Black Mountains of North Carolina. I'm sorry, it was posted today, but it happened yesterday. These are pictures from Tim Davis of these wave clouds. Really cool stuff if you got a chance to see them. I saw some gravity clouds today, I think is what I saw. But if you got a chance to see any of those cool clouds across the Carolinas, they're always fun to see as well, too.
I think I can speak for Frank. We saw a lot of clouds here in South Carolina today.
It was just slate gray overcast here in South Carolina, or at least it was over Columbia, and no Kelvin Helmholtz clouds to be seen because there were too many other clouds in the way.
Yeah, same here. I think I saw our buddy, panelist Jared Smith, share a picture of a very dim looking look at the sunshine for maybe like 30 seconds in Charleston, and then it clouded right back up. So
that's how I was this weekend. It was like cold, cloudy. I made it about a day before my wife was like, here, come sit underneath the grow lamp for the inside plants. I was like, thank you.
You know, it was, but it was one of those, Frank and I were talking about this before the show. We saw a little bit more rain than I think was supposed to happen over the weekend here in South Carolina, which...
Oh, did you? Are you bragging? Yeah. 'Cause I could use some.
Well, I was going to say a lot of the Carolina is still under that drought, but that rainy and cold weekend kind of let you stay inside and give you an excuse to like get anything done inside. So, that was a good thing.
Yes. But, yes. Sleeping. I did sleeping inside.
That's yeah. a good place for that. We'll get that update on the drought monitor tomorrow.
I was going to say there's still, you know, thankfully the one fire, the Poplar fire up in the Henderson County area, I think it's like 75% contained.
It may even be higher than that. Hang on.
Okay. I knew yesterday it was 75%. I hadn't looked today, but even though it's contained and in some areas saw a little bit of light rain, there's still some pretty significant drought going on. And, you know, we're starting to see now, especially in North Carolina, really affecting some of the local lakes. I know Lake Norman, Lake James, Lake yes. Hickory, all seeing significantly low levels. So, I know we have a few fires out here, so I'm trying to choose my words wisely here. It really kind of reminds me of the drought we had in 2016, but we just don't have as many fires right now, which is a good thing.
Yeah, not gonna
But it wouldn't take much. You know, those burn bans are in place for a reason. So be sure that you're following that.
Here's the info on the fires. The good news is that Poplar One in Henderson County, Poplar Drive, is at 95% contained and remains at 434 acres. The Almond Knob Fire in Madison County is 36 acres and contained now at 90%. And then there are firefighting efforts underway in Elk Creek, Triplett, Branch Fires. There's one in Elk Creek Fire in Watauga. That one's at 90% contained and 225 acres. And so we have one in Cherokee and Clay counties that's at 79%. So the good news is on this Wednesday night, as Scotty was just kind of alluding to, more often than not, a lot of these fires right now are largely contained, but it would not take much for us to get into a fire problem on top of the existing drought problem.
I remember, and then I want to toss it to Frank after this, but I remember when I was living in the foothills in 2016, we had these fires going on, and they were so bad that we had wildfire crews from all over the country that were set up in the North Carolina area fighting these fires right at the week of Thanksgiving. So we don't want these firefighters to have to leave their families and fires. But Frank, I know regionally in the Grand Strand, the PD, we've seen some brush fires, but nothing major. Is there anything in the Columbia area or upstate area that you've heard of?
Not that I've heard of. I haven't really looked that carefully at it, but I haven't heard of any big wildfires happening in the upstate or anywhere else in South Carolina. A few smaller ones here and there, but nothing more than that.
Because I know that stretch from like Greenville to Spartanburg is in the severe portion of the drought. I think it's a D4 there. So that area is...
D3, but yes.
D3, yeah.
They're in the extreme drought area.
Yeah.
Along I-85 there.
Yeah, so I know that's an area that definitely wants to keep from burning if at all possible, because that is not good. We never like to see anything over, honestly, a D1 in the drought scenario. So.
Right.
Maybe a chance on Tuesday to get some rain.
Yeah, it'd be nice if we could get some rain, especially in the upstate. The thing about the rain that we had, you know, as Scotty mentioned, the worst of the drought is over the northern half of South Carolina and into North Carolina. I've got my screen shared. Hopefully you can see the drought monitor there for South Carolina. But compare that to rainfall for the last 7 days, which we only had the one rain event. And yes, it overperformed over South Carolina's coastal plain and into southeastern North Carolina and the Outer Banks. But that's not where the worst of the drought is. The worst of the drought's in the upstate in western North Carolina, and there wasn't much rain there. So we didn't get much help from the drought there at all from the rain that we saw this past week.
Yeah, I got like 1/10 of an inch. Q humid it'll be all weekend long through a very slow drizzle.
Right.
So we'll look for that new drought monitor. Comes out every Thursday at I think about 8:30 in the morning. So we'll post that on our social media platforms once we get that update in. Well, Frank, Scotty, Carly, good to see you all. And we're looking forward to the weather telethon on Saturday, 10 to 10. So we hope you'll check us out. You can pull us up on YouTube on your phone and your smart TV. Lots of devices are YouTube compatible, and I know that's where I'm encouraging people to check us out. And then don't forget, if you can donate, we'd really appreciate it. If not, share the link, and maybe other folks can hop on board. And we're looking forward to having a fun day, a purposeful day, and that's coming your way Saturday, the 18th, right here wherever you watch the Carolina Weather Group.
Absolutely, and thank you again, James, so much for all the work you guys have been doing. I'm so excited, and I know you guys are too.
Oh, don't thank me. Yeah, we got to wait to see if the computers all go up in flames. All right.
Those kind of things happen around here.
It can. It totally can. But yeah, as you can see, my camera has a mind of its own. So who knows? All right. Well, I'm going to go get some sleep because Saturday is going to be a long day. We'll talk to everybody again real soon. Thanks for joining us this week on the Carolina Weather Group.